Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
The Zaharias case is a very unique case because it is an ultimate cold case. It's one of those cases that investigators like myself rarely get an opportunity to sink our teeth into. But we do know that the more this case sat in the 90s and the 2000s and nobody really did anything, you know, you get that aura of arrogance and you get that aura of, well, no one's chasing me now, so I'm all done. So we're really pouring the pressure on and we're really stepping this game up because, you know, quite frankly, you know, this man before he dies, which our client, Lou Zaharias, is not in the best of health. And we believe that he has a right to see his children before he passes. And that's what's kind of got us motivated in our offices.
Hello, and welcome to episode 85 of The Vanished. 3-year-old Christopher and 15-month-old Lisa May were abducted from their home in Mission Viejo, California by their mother, Susan, on November 20th, 1987. Ever since that day, their father, Louis Zaharias, has never stopped searching for them. His search has stretched across the United States, but he's always been a few steps behind them. This November, it will be 30 years that Christopher and Lisa May have been missing, and they may not even know their true identities because they were so young when they were taken. One of them could be your friend, neighbor, or coworker, and you have no idea. This is Christopher and Lisa May's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I get so many requests to cover cases, so it's been a really long time since I picked a story to cover based on my own personal interest. One day, I was on Facebook, and I saw a video that was created by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The video featured Lou Zaharias talking about his missing children. When I watched the video, it broke my heart. It still does. It makes me cry every single time I watch it. I knew that I had to reach out to Lou and offer to cover their story on the show. Here's the audio portion of that video.
My name is Louis Zaharias, and this is an open letter to my missing son and daughter, Christopher and Lisa May Zaharias. There's so much that I want to say to you, so many feelings, so many thoughts, so many wishes, and so much love. I have longed for you almost 3 decades now. On November 20th, 2016, 29th anniversary of your kidnapping, all these 3 decades without you. When you were abducted, Chris, you were just 3.5 years old, and Lisa May, you were just 15 months. Now, my son, you're a man of 32, and my daughter, a young woman of 30. Halloween is a tough day for me because it's the last fun event you and I ever shared together. I took you and your mom to the Mission Viejo pumpkin patch, where she took pictures of you on the rides and pictures of us together. I missed you terribly, and all the holidays since then have been so hard. My love for you has never diminished from the day you were born since the first time I held you in my arms. Because you have always been my life and my joys. You have always been in my hopes and dreams. You have always been my greatest loves and most valuable personal treasures. You have always been my best work and the greatest thing I have ever done. God bless and protect you wherever you are today. All my love, Dad.
While listening to this show, do you ever feel like you connect to a certain story for one reason or another? Something about it reminds you of your own life or someone in your life. That happened to me with this one because I'm just a couple weeks older than Christopher. I thought about my own father and the close relationship that I have with him. 30 years is a long time. I began to think of all the things that I've done since 1987 and all the things that Lou has missed with his own children. He could be a grandparent by now and not even know. There's an opportunity here to help reunite him with his kids. You can never make up for the time that he's lost, but there's still time to catch up and enjoy the future. I spoke to Christopher and Lisa May's father, Lou Zaharias, and also his private investigator, Philip Klein from Klein Investigations. In this part, you'll hear from Philip, who gave me a good overview of the 30-year history of this case and what they're currently working on to try to locate Christopher and Lisa May. This isn't a mystery of who took the children. The mystery here is how their mother, Susan, has been able to conceal her location for so many years. Now, you have to remember that getting away with something like this was much easier back in the 1980s, but you'll also learn that it's pretty clear that Susan had help along the way. Philip explained what was going on leading up to the disappearance of Christopher and Lisa May.
The Zaharias case is a very unique case because it is an ultimate cold case. It's one of those cases that investigators like myself rarely get an opportunity to sink our teeth into. We were contacted by Mr. Zaharias' legal counsel and then obviously Mr. Zaharias himself about 18 to 20 months ago. Our focus and goal has been to recreate and rebuild up the incident. So let's take a step back to when the incident began. On November 20th of 1987, Lou Zaharias and his wife lived in a small city outside of San Diego, California. They had kind of a cantankerous, to say it the best, cantankerous relationship. They tried to get along, then they would get along, then they wouldn't get along, and, you know, they just were oil and vinegar, let's just say it that way. So the city they lived in was Santa Ana, California. One evening, there were drugs involved. There was consideration of drugs involved. Lou's wife was, let's just say, having issues with high-end drugs. Methamphetamines, that sort of thing. And Lou's wife was taking cocaine. She was just addicted to drugs. In that, she was very, very paranoid. And anybody that's involved in the drug trade or knows anything about drugs knows that drugs can be very, very, it creates a paranoid behavior. She had changed her name a couple of times as well to Friends. The names were interesting how she would do it. She would change the names from surnames to her middle name, to her maiden name, to all these names. So we were really, really, really concerned that she had tried to begin to cover herself in the beginning. Susan changed her name from Beth to Susan to Susan Gamble to Beth Gamble to Susan Zaharias. So she had begun a couple of times 2 months before the children's disappearance and her disappearance to start to begin to change her name. During that time, the interesting part is she was really coming out and telling everybody, hey, look, I'm going to kidnap these children. You're a danger to my children. When in fact, she was the danger. So they had eventually decided that they were going to get divorced and they were going to move on from each other's life. And this was, again, coming up to about October of 1987. And so, again, the court process was very cantankerous. You know, we see this quite often, even back into the 80s, where people don't appreciate or agree what's happened in the courts, so they begin to go after each other with silly accusations. In this case, the accusations were what we call spit-out accusations, such as, let's say that I'm married to a girl and I'm using drugs, and so what I'm really doing, I spit out at the person across from me and try to say, you're the one using the drugs, you're the one doing these things. And so that's what she tried to do in her paranoid state.
On November 19th, 1987, Lou and his wife Susan got into a verbal argument. That evening, he kissed his children goodnight just like he would any other night. But what he didn't know was that it would be the last time. The following morning, Lou got up early and went to work. While he was gone, Susan took off with the children. Susan has family in several different areas of the country. Philip explained how they helped her when she initially took off with Christopher and Lisa May.
She has a long history of family back to Oklahoma, outside of the Oklahoma City area. Further, she had other history all the way to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. When we first got this case, we knew those were two areas that we wanted to focus on. We knew a couple of things from documents already created by the Orange County Sheriff's Department and the Orange County District Attorney's Office and the FBI, who are very active in this case. Susan ran to her aunt's house. Her name was Mrs. Cann, C-A-N-N. She was very, very close to her aunt. Susan had a very bad problem with her parents. She was not very close to her parents. We do know that. And then she was also very close to her grandmother. Her name is Mrs. Hettinger, H-E-T-T-I-N-G-E-R. So to review, Susan took off on November 20th of 1987. She was tracked to her aunt's house, Mrs. Cann, and then to her grandmother's house in Oklahoma. At that point, she tried to begin some type of small negotiations with Lou Zaharias. And Lou was simply saying, just come home. Let's stop negotiating this stuff. We'll get divorced. We'll follow the rule of the court, which is, you know, first, third, and fifth weekends, Wednesday nights, you know, the standard visitation type thing. But Susan was going to have none of it. So Susan and the two children disappeared into the night from Oklahoma.
After leaving Oklahoma, Susan went to Pennsylvania, where her sister was living.
We found out through the FBI and through documents that Susan stayed about 3 months with the Nozel family in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I did that again. So let's kind of review. She got out of California. She headed to Oklahoma. And then we do know that she was with her sister and her parents in the state of Pennsylvania. So the last known sighting of this family, I would say, would be Pittsburgh with her sister.
In the late 1980s, we were just starting to see DNA being utilized to solve crimes, but it was not widely used until several years later. We were still a couple decades away from the creation of the NamUs database, which stores DNA, fingerprints, and dental records for thousands of missing and unidentified persons across the United States. Philip told me what they have to try to help identify Susan, Christopher, or Lisa May.
As everybody knows, we have Social Security numbers, we have identifiers, and we have things that, you know, that identify who we are, what we are, and what we have been. Susan had had problems out in California. She'd been arrested up near the San Jose area. She had been arrested in two other cities where her fingerprints had been taken. And of course, all fingerprints go into the system. So we do have a good, accurate fingerprint of her. However, DNA at the time was not being used. So we do have DNA of one of the children, being the female, and we do have a partial thumbprint and fingerprints of the other child and the mother. So now we have the evidence that we need that we can compare these children.
Fast forward 30 years, this is what Klein Investigations has been doing to try to find Christopher and Lisa May.
Let's talk about current date. So when our team actually became involved, what we began to do is we verified everything that was on the books, obviously. You have to go through and you have to have your tools ready to go out there. We were able to track her, in which we've been to Oklahoma, we've been to California. So we've interviewed all of the witnesses that were her friends. And we do have verification that she did have a very bad drug problem. We do have verification that she was with her sister and that she is very, very close to her sister. And we have a possibility of one former employer and one former residence that she was living. Now, interestingly enough, the family that lived out in Oklahoma, they were very, very, very well known that in January 2016, the mother died. I guess it would be the grandmother in that case, died in Oklahoma. Unfortunately, we were told by the funeral directors out there that there was a person that did came and see the body during off hours. We did have surveillance on the funeral, and she did not show up during the funeral. However, we do have a mystery guest that did show up after the visitation right at about 11, 12 o'clock. So that was very concerning to us. So, it was about midnight when she showed up, and the visit was about 15 minutes. We asked for a description of the woman, said that she was actually in kind of a hoodie type operation. So, and she was in her 50s. So that tells us that was her. We have not seen the two children whatsoever.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Philip told me more about the complete lack of cooperation that his team has run into with Susan's family.
Let's talk about cooperation. Obviously, you know, as investigators do and investigators that listen to your podcast know, we go out and we visit these witnesses. Unfortunately, we are getting zero, and I mean zero cooperation from this family. Now, interestingly enough, one of the family members that we have been interviewing is a priest, or he's a bishop for one of the major churches up north. And he is been absolutely to the point of such non-cooperation that he's asked us to leave the property. He's asked the U.S. Marshals to leave the property. He's asked everybody to leave the property. He's a brother-in-law of Susan's. Unfortunately, there's not much we can do. His name's John Nosel, lives in the city of Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh suburbs, and he's a bishop. So unfortunately, John and Susan's sister are zero cooperation. They will not talk to us. They refuse to talk to us. We've made reach outs to Juliana Nosel. We've made reach outs to John Nosel. And, unfortunately, they won't talk to us. So that indicates they know something. Federal agents have also approached them. You know, they've refused to talk at all. John and Juliana have children, Chloe. I believe the other one's name is Susan, and named after, obviously, Susan. The two kids have been approached also, and they kind of taunt us in law enforcement by saying, no, there is a perfect crime. There is a perfect crime. So Chloe and Susan Nosel and John Nosel, who is the third child, they taunt us often. Maybe not John as much, but the two girls, Chloe and Susan, two nieces of our suspect, taunt us quite often and, you know, say you'll never find her, that sort of thing. So that creates a little acrimonious, it creates a huge acrimonious world for us. But it's okay because there is no perfect crime and we do have DNA and all we need is one of them to mess up or, one of them to get their fingerprints made for some type of job they want and it gets in the system and then we'll know right where they are and then work our way out. We prefer to work our way in again because let's say little Lisa May uses her fingerprints. She wants to be a teacher or whatever. And she's old enough now to be in her career path. And maybe she wants a security clearance. Maybe something happens. You know, she would be literally drug off and put into a room. And maybe she doesn't know anything is what we're saying. Maybe she just doesn't know, you know, what her mother's done. We don't know. But we do know that the more this case sat in the 90s and the 2000s and nobody really did anything, you know, you get that aura of arrogance and you get that aura of, well, no one's chasing me now, so I'm all done.
Some of you may be wondering, if Christopher and Lisa May are in their 30s, why haven't they come forward? It's believed that they either don't know who they are or they're worried about their family getting in trouble if they were to come forward. There's also the issue of parental alienation.
Christopher was 3 years old when he left and Lisa May was 15 months. So we're anticipating that Christopher and Lisa May probably suffer from parental alienation syndrome. Now, just to give you a quick brief on parental alienation syndrome, that is when a mother or a father begins to put psychological suggestions in small children's minds. We have seen this tremendously throughout the years where we will get a kidnapped child back or we will get a runaway back where we have to send them to deprogrammers to deprogram what they've been told. For example, one case that we had down in Zacatecas, Mexico, that we brought back, the child was told that the father was a rapist, that he had stabbed people and shot people. We had to show the child that that, in fact, was not true. In another case that we brought back, we had the mother actually tell the child that the father was dead. When we began to show her pictures in the picture book on the airplane, which is in private because we fly private airplanes down, we began to show them pictures, and she went into an emotional breakdown and a shattered breakdown. At first, she was happy that her daddy was really alive, but then she turned back where her mother was handcuffed in the back of the plane and started yelling at her mother saying, "Why did you tell me this? Why did you tell me this?" And of course, the mother says, "Well, I'm just trying to protect you. He's a bad man." Well, this guy had done nothing wrong. In fact, he was just one of the most wonderful people you'll ever meet. You know, people act silly and people act crazy and they forget about the psychological end and how what they tell their children actually hurts them. So we believe Christopher at the age of 3 years old and Lisa May at the age of 15 months old knew absolutely nothing about their father. And that we believe that they probably either changed their name and gave them new Social Security numbers because the Social Security numbers have not been used and they are being watched very closely. And we believe that they probably went out to a cemetery, obtained a name of a baby, got the social security number of the baby, and then changed their names and went that way with it.
You may be wondering what kind of trouble Susan's facing when she is finally apprehended.
We do have a current felony warrant for Susan's arrest. We have a UFAP. It's called a Universal Flight to Avoid Prosecution. $13 million judgment against her from the criminal courts, a bench warrant from the criminal courts. So, you know, Susan's in some trouble. And Susan needs to realize that now, with the technology that we have today, her time is tick-tock. Unfortunately for Susan, she's going to have to spend some time in jail. You know, like I said, I don't know how we'll handle the children. You know, my belief is that they're out there. My belief is that they don't know their mother has done this to them. We believe that thus the visitation to her mother's funeral was in cloak and dagger secret. It is on the U.S. Marshals list. It is in NCIC. It is on every federal agent's list. So, you know, now the billboards have gone up all over the United States of America. It is our anticipation that we will begin to move this case to a conclusion. But right now, there's about 1,000 billboards up. There is a huge push going on in the Zaharias case to get the public's knowledge, especially in the areas where we know they have been seen. San Jose, obviously Oklahoma City, and throughout the Panhandle of Oklahoma, and in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Philip told me what they're working on right now with this case.
So basically where we're tracing them right now in the two hot lead areas we've got is the state of California. We're working some leads in the state of California. We've got a couple of leads in Texas. We actually, for the first time, will announce we did a raid on a residence in Dallas, Texas, with the Dallas Police Department. One of the residents had some warrants for their arrest. We did take them into custody, but however, she was not there. So we were able to establish some leads, but she's staying very close to the Oklahoma-Texas border, we believe, with relationships in California that she goes and visits. I can't get really in depth, I'm sure, as you would respect. Let's just say it's hot right now in the hotness of the investigation. So we're really pouring the pressure on. And we're really stepping this game up. You know, quite frankly, you know, this man, before he dies, which our client, Lou Zaharias, is not in the best of health. And we believe that he has a right to see his children before he passes. And that's what's kind of got us motivated in our offices. So that's kind of the history of this case.
Earlier, Philip mentioned this last known sighting or location of the children being in Pennsylvania with Susan's sister. He gave me more information about this sighting and where it's believed they went after they left Pennsylvania.
The last sighting that we know of, okay, was in 1989. But we did see them at the Knowles residence, putting them on an airplane. We do have the airplane tickets. We do have where they went to, which was Michigan. And it was 1989 was the actual last firm hands-on, we see you. That was 1989. Now, we do have conjecture from interviews of folks around the Nozzle residence in the Pittsburgh area that this woman has been seen there quite often up until about 2 years ago. Now, we sent a TAC team to Oklahoma, and interestingly enough, we were nosing around the city of Oklahoma City, outside the city of Oklahoma City, and some of the relatives. And we received a phone call from a guy that was a private investigator out of Oklahoma City that began to threaten us. He said we were practicing in Oklahoma without a license, which he didn't know what he was talking about. And he threatened us, said that if we come back to Oklahoma and if we continue to investigate, if we continue to harass these people, that we were going to prison. So obviously, the first thing we did was we contacted the Oklahoma Highway Patrol and OSBI, and OSBI opened an active case file on it. And of course, this young private investigator who didn't know what he was talking about got a little bit of a lecture that he could be harboring a fugitive. And so he went away into the night. We have some calls from Oklahoma that we write shortly after that incident, which was approximately 11 months ago. We had a couple of phone calls, which were very, very interesting, where they were wanted to talk to us. Erica, I believe it was her name, and she said she was from Oklahoma and had some information on the Zaharias case. We tried to recontact her, and she had a throw phone, and the throw phone was disconnected. We know that Erica has been victimized a couple of times and some things, but we believe her because she had information that only investigators knew. So I think that that was a part of it. Those were the last times we've seen that we have knowledge of the children being seen.
One thing that I've wondered about with this case is if it's likely that Christopher and Lisa May don't know their true identities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Remember, Christopher was 3 years old when he disappeared. Lisa May was 15 months old when she disappeared. So that is an absolute probability. The situation is Susan is our issue. Susan is out there. She's in her 50s. She obviously has to sustain herself. She obviously has fingerprints on file with NCIC. FBI just put her fingerprints, less than 2 months ago into the ICAD. And so, again, you know, we're just waiting on that one hit. You've got to do a search on it. We haven't got them to do a search on the partial fingerprint, but we're getting there.
Philip told me how private investigators work alongside law enforcement in cold cases just like this one to help bring a resolution.
We're starting to move in the United States of America, and I just want to put this in, that we're just starting to move in the United States of America into a what we call a cooperation state. And so for your listeners out there, and mainly people that are private investigators, personal protection officers, through their commissions around the United States and the 50 states, and their governing agencies, law enforcement has all of a sudden woken up and figured out that a lot of us are not bad guys. We're really good guys. And in fact, most of us are ex-law enforcement, ex-government, or maybe even current government. And there's this working relationship that has begun started at the federal level with private investigators, because, you know, we're out there on the streets and we see things and we report things and we know things, and we're an intelligence gathering group. We're a bunch of little intelligence gatherers that presents intelligence to our clients. And so it's always good to have a good relationship with us. They don't have the resources with the crime rates there is today, nor do they have the knowledge of how to hunt down some of these folks. Now, on the FBI and the federal level, yes, they do have those experience. However, their problem is, on the FBI level, is that they look at it as, well, that's mom and dad. So what, the kids with mom, whoever, nobody cares. So they don't really take an interest in it. Now, the U.S. Secret Service, they'll do a little bit of the computer side work on it. Then you get the U.S. Marshals, the hunters. Boy, they love to hunt these guys down. That's their job. They hunt humans for a living. The task force, I tell you, it's the U.S. Marshals is probably my favorite group to work with, because they're blue-collar guys, and they love to get their feet dirty, and they love to go out there and hunt these people down. And so that's great. Diplomatic Security Services, all the other security agencies that handle Homeland Security, including Homeland Security Investigations, all these guys, they're into it. But they have other things like ISIS and, you know, terrorism. So they're very concentrated on that. So us going in as private investigators, they're usually willing to accept what we have, check out what we have, being verification, and then being able to, you know, kind of turn the case over to us. So right now we're going through a period of great cooperation on the federal level. On the state level, obviously the feds are talking to the states, and the states are saying, yeah, look, some of these guys got it going on. I don't want to show off our firm. Our firm has a wonderful relationship out there with law enforcement. And then you get down to the counties and the locals. These guys don't have resources to investigate cases like this. They just don't. You get a small city police department. In fact, we're working with one county in Texas that has six deputies. That's all he's got, the sheriff and four deputies. And the sixth guy hadn't even been hired yet. and they have a major case, a missing persons case in their county that we're working with them on. And they come in and they look at us, oh, y'all, you know, just a bunch of dumbass PIs, et cetera, et cetera. Then they see the resources we bring in, the dogs, the specialists, the psychologists, the deprogrammers. And then they look at us like, oh, my God, we don't have this kind of resource. In fact, we've never worked a case like this. We can work a traffic case. We can work a drug case. We can work a beating case. We can work a domestic disturbance case. Hell, we can arrest drunks all night long for DUI. But we've never had a kidnapping. Never. The guys we're working with right now in a small town, none of them have ever had a kidnapping before. We bring the resources, and we're able to help them. So what I want to say out there is to all the private investigators that listen to your show and that sort of thing, you know, including like this Zaharias case, this is a perfect opportunity that the state, federal, and local and private security board investigators are all working together as a team. So it's refreshing to see the new attitudes coming out, which is probably, you know, the new attitude is kind of, yeah, we're not interested. You go handle it, but be sure to report back to us. And if you find them, take them into custody and we'll be there in about 10 minutes. You know, that's probably where it is today. But still, it's refreshing that we can share with them and then they share with us and we can move these cases along, which means one thing to the bad guys that listen to your show. Just don't do it because, you know, remember, time's on our side. We don't run sprints. We run marathons. And cold cases like this, you know, now you see law enforcement starting to pull these boxes off shelves and all these cold cases they're pulling off shelves. And they're starting to solve them. I mean, you can see it, you know, they have TV shows that are dedicated to it. And they're showing how they can come back and now with the new modern technology prove these things. So it's an exciting time for victims. It's an exciting time for PSB officers and agents such as us. And it's an exciting time for law enforcement because, you know, now we're starting to pull these cases like Zaharias off the table and start to investigate them and bring them to fruition.
Back in 1987, it was easier for someone to get away with a crime like this. Many changes in technology and legislation have made it much harder in today's world. These changes may be what finally helps them apprehend Susan.
As the Social Security Administration has begun to upgrade their computers, and everybody has a number. I don't care who you are. You got a number, okay? And that was there to, originally, in the beginning, it was there to provide you benefits when you were sick, affirmed, or retired. Now that idea of Social Security numbers that were assigned to everybody back way back in the 30s and 40s, that number now is called your image number. The IRS uses it. Homeland Security uses it. I mean, I don't care what you say. You got to file somewhere with some federal agency other than Social Security on IRS. I mean, come on, it's all in one system. The great thing for the bad guys was, and I use the operative term was, that the computer systems at Social Security and also in our government were horrible. They were just lax. It was lackadaisical. You had to have permission to look at somebody's Social Security number. Agencies weren't talking. And so in the wisdom back in after 9/11, W. Bush, and actually before that with Clinton, they came up with this idea of why doesn't everybody share, duh, and why doesn't everybody put it in one big database, duh. And so right after, as Clinton was coming out and Bush was coming in, they were working on that, then 9/11 happened. Once 9/11 happened, everybody who comes into this country and pulls a job gets a Social Security number. That's the end of the story. You get assigned a Social Security number. And that number is your person ID number. So they have upgraded the computer systems now that everybody has a file. So when one certain agency logs in, let's say Homeland Security, who has the highest security clearance around, they can click on your Social Security number. They can actually get your driver's license picture. They can get your, I mean, they've got it all in there. It's a dossier of you. It's everything about you. So we know this. We know Susan Gamble, Zaharias, whatever you want to call her, whatever she's calling herself today. We know that she has a dossier. It's a matter of time before her fingerprints and her dossier catch up. I'll give an example. In Texas, when you go renew your driver's license now, you must provide your fingerprints. Those fingerprints are loaded into your file, and then they're cross-matched with any possible person that you may know. Now, that's why you see Homeland Security, they have just put out the notice, and I think there's five states right now, maybe six states right now, that are not cooperating with Homeland Security and not coming up with the driver's the new driver's license programs, where you go in and you get your driver's license, and while you're there, you do your fingerprints. They don't do that in, I think, five states. And the government, the federal government's come back and say, you either cooperate or, you know, you're not going to be part of Homeland Security, and there goes your grants. A lot of the legislators in many states that are very conservative, Utah, I believe, is one, Iowa's, Idaho, some of those, Montana, some of those states that don't, that believe in smaller government, that don't want anything to do with the federal government other than, you know, what's absolutely necessary, you know. And so what they're doing now is they're telling them, hey, five states, you got 2 years to get caught up. So once we start getting these other states caught up, my belief is that there will be a cross-reference, and then we will we'll be able to figure it out equally on the DNA side. A lot of times, unless you're arrested for a Class B misdemeanor or above, you don't get your DNA taken. They're taking DNA now out of anybody who gets arrested other than traffic violations. They're taking DNA out now, and they're actually being very, 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 very serious about doing cross-reference checks and putting it in. So my belief is probably if we don't get to her first, which we're kind of right behind her right now, if we don't get to her first, the system's going to catch up to her. She's going to go for a driver's license renewal, or she's going to get drunk one night at a bar and get pulled over and get a DUI. Something's going to happen, and it's going to break this case.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
When we start to discuss some of the advances that have been made to make it easier to solve crimes, there's some really interesting ethical questions that come up. How far are we willing to go to be safer or just feel safer?
Do we want Big Brother to be watching us? Do we want Big Brother to have our fingerprints, to have our DNA? Do we want the government to have this file? Well, after 9/11, everybody woke up and got scared and went, yeah, hell yeah, we want them to have it. Now everybody, there's some people out there going, well, maybe they shouldn't have it. Maybe it's a constitutional question. You know, quite frankly, I don't know. I mean, am I comfortable with the government having everything on me? Well, you know, I've got 7 licenses and, you know, all these different licenses the state of Texas makes us have, Georgia, Florida, California, you know, is it right to have it? Yeah, the argument is something big goes down. Yeah, it's right. But if you but if not, you know, maybe we need to take a step back and a breath. But it would hurt me as an investigator, as a kidnap expert, as somebody that uses these tools every day of the week. So it's definitely a constitutional question. There's a lot of pro and say in it. I do attend a lot of these conventions. I speak at many of these conventions regarding hackers, regarding kidnappers, regarding stalkers, regarding all these things. You know, we get into these roundtable discussions, and it's interesting to watch even investigators on our side, the good guys' side, go, you know, maybe we got a little bit too much. But for the Zaharias case, this is one of those where we're willing to use anything we can get because we need to get this case file out of here.
One thing that's being utilized in some cold cases is DNA that people have voluntarily submitted to places like 23andMe or Ancestry.com. I know many of you listening followed the Lori Erica Ruff case for a long time. Lori was a woman who committed suicide back in 2010, and after her death, it was discovered that she wasn't who everyone thought she was. But at the same time, no one could figure out who she really was. It took 6 years, but in 2016, they found her true identity after submitting her daughter's DNA to Ancestry and 23andMe. They found some relatives and then did some more digging to find out who she was. There's hope that Christopher or Lisa May might one day submit their own DNA to 23andMe or Ancestry.com.
We sit back as investigators and just smile. I mean, we love it. I mean, use it. Come on. Sign up for 23andMe. We want you out there. Sign up for all these, because this all goes into a database and we're able to use these databases and we're able to figure out, you know, I'm hoping that one of those two children, Christopher or Lisa May, might watch a commercial and get in 23andMe and put her stuff in there. We've already uploaded all the DNA into 23andMe. So if they decide to do it, boom, we got them. It's just good for us. It's good for the government. It's good for everybody. But again, it gets back to the Orwellian theory. When is too much and too much, and when is enough enough? And I don't have the answers to that. You know, like I said to you earlier, I'm split, and I think a lot of investigators are split. But like I said, in the Zaharias case, it could help us tremendously.
This is Philip's message to Susan.
And you look at somebody like Susan Gamble Zaharias, who's sitting out there right now, knowing this technology is catching up to her. You know, eventually one of two things is going to happen. She's going to die, and her sister, and we're all going to figure out where she was, who she was, and when she died, right? Or two, you know, she's going to get caught, and she's going to go to prison. You know, that's why I say to her, and I've said this in the national media 2 or 3 times, that the smartest thing for her to do is go negotiate a deal. Go somewhere and negotiate a deal. Go to your local law enforcement and or get a lawyer, actually, and go negotiate your deal. What will happen to her today? You know, she's a first-time offender. Well, she's not as far as a felony goes. She has a lot of misdemeanor charges, drug charges, from San Jose all the way down to San Diego. What we're saying is go negotiate your deal. You know, we're playing the prices right at this point.
It appears that Susan was helped by her family for many years, and that's most likely how she's been able to get away with it for so long. I wondered if her family could eventually be facing charges as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So as they've been approached by us, there's no crime if they say, screw you, go away. I would anticipate that the FBI will be enacting some type of charges, or the state of California will be enacting some kind of charges against some of the family members that we know have been involved. One of the interesting parts is to all this is that the bishop, Nozel, out in Pittsburgh, and his wife have separated. And this has happened since we've become involved and since we have told them, look, here we come. We're coming for you. We let them know when we first started in this case, they all got a certified letter. If you know something, say something. If you don't, you know, this is up to you guys. And then they immediately separated about 2 months later. Did we put psychological pressure on everybody? Maybe. That wasn't our intent. But our intent was to say, hey, look, it's a new ball game. It's a new game. We're all here. Let's get up and play. Get your uniform on, because here we go. And if you want out, now's the time to get out. But don't pussyfoot around. And again, the reaction we got was a divorce. And then the kids, the girls began to taunt us and taunt investigators. So I think the girls, I forget which college it was, that one girl was going to. It was in Pittsburgh. Anyway, I think the one college this one little girl was involved in sat her down and said, the investigators came by here. They want to talk to you. She said, I didn't want to talk. She lawyered up, which is probably a smart thing for her to do, because we believe that she has direct contact with them. But equally, let's get back to technology. The federal government's involved in this. You can get a warrant to listen to a cell phone now, a dime a dozen. What they say, 99.8% of the requests for warrants that come into the FISA courts are approved. It is a felony. It is a UFAP. They do have the proper predicate to get a listening order. So my anticipation is it's unless they're using throw phones, unless they're using different types of technology, backdoor technology, fake names, false names, that sort of thing. But all those come with IP addresses. So you can assume the investigators like us are watching. We're watching Twitter. We're watching Facebook. We're watching all this stuff. In fact, we have a room right down the hall from where I'm speaking to you from that's all we do. We listen. We listen to what's going on. We watch what you write. If you're witnessing some of these cases and people screw up, we watch your friends. We befriend you as on a fake friendship, on a doxing friendship. There's technology, and we're right in there using it. But the quick answer to your question is that if I was involved with Susan Zaharias or Gamble or whatever she's calling herself, I'd probably stop being associated with her. Because you're probably going to take a charge. You're going to clip a charge. I think the charge she'll clip may be negotiable if she turns herself in to a probation period of 10 years. But if she continues to play this game and we continually have to hunt, I'd say she's probably going to spend, I'd say a good 20 years in the California penal system.
So many cases need just one good tip to solve them, and that's what they're hoping for in the Zaharias case.
Anybody that's been in this business for any point of time understands that it's always that one little break, that one little piece of the puzzle that you couldn't find, that you find underneath the table, and you go, oh, what about this? And you put it in there, and there's the picture. And I think that in this case and in some of the other cases we have, Blassingame, Molly Miller, the Orcoons, I think some of these cases that we have around the world and around the United States, I think that it's always that one little piece of evidence off, and I think we'll find it in Zaharias. I think your point is well taken. It's that one little piece, and we're getting close on this case, on the Zaharias case. And you talk about a guy, Lou Zaharias, that is in his later years. I mean, he has a right to see his children. I mean, he has at least a right to hear the history of his children, so that when he does lay his head down for the last time, he can lay it down in peace.
That brings us to the end of part one. In part two, you'll get to hear from Christopher and Lisa May's dad, Lou. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of Christopher or Lisa May Zaharias, please contact Klein Investigations at 409-729-8798. You can leave a tip on the Facebook page called Help Find the Zaharias Children. You can also contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST or 1-800-843-5678. I encourage you to go check out the age progression photo of Christopher and Lisa May along with Susan. I'll be sharing them on social media, but you can easily find them along with a ton of other photos on the Help Find the Zaharias Children Facebook page. If you'd like to contact me, I'm on Facebook, where there's a page and a group. I'm on Twitter at The Vanish Pod and also on Instagram. If you're interested in having a missing loved one featured on the show, please fill out the case submission form at thevanishpodcast.com. I would like to thank you all for listening and doing what you can to help share these stories. I hope everyone has a great week, and I'll catch up with you all in part two.
I hope the discussion with your group vanished. I hope that you guys start talking about parental kidnapping more. I hope that everyone out there understands that this is an absolute epidemic. And when I say epidemic, I'm not blowing fluff. This is an epidemic. We kind of joke in our investigator senior investigators meetings that wish this would stop. And somebody said, well, that'll put us out of business. And I kind of look up at him. I said, boy, would that be refreshing? We can go on to other things. I think that's where we are right now. So I hope your listeners out there will, and especially guys in the investigation world that listen to your show, I hope people will really understand that this is an epidemic. I really think that we need to educate the public on what to do, what not to do. We need to educate investigators on what to do and what not to do. And especially we need to educate law enforcement and the judicial system that this is just not mom's got the baby or dad's got the baby. This is about civil rights. This is about the danger to the children. I can't tell you how many filicides that we've had before when we started getting close to a mother that has a child and they kill the child. The offending parent kills the child. If I can't have them, no one will. So it's a very dangerous situation out there in a very dangerous world right now. So we need to get our heads up as investigators, and we need to get educated, and law enforcement needs to get educated.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.